Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Derek Evely as my special expert guest. Derek Evely is a highly successful coach and athletics educator. In the mid-1990s, he was the head coach of the Kamloops Track and Field Club before moving to Edmonton to work as the sports science manager at the Canadian Athletics Coaching Center, also known as the CACC. Focusing on coach education and training, application of sports science to track and field, and the overall development of the sport in Canada, the CACC was hugely successful as an endeavor that led to Derek being recruited to a high-level position with the United Kingdom Athletics, the sport governing body for Britain. Today, Derek is a professional coach with expertise in all areas of speed power development with a passion for the heavy throwing events in athletics, otherwise known as track and field. He is the owner and president of Evely Sports Consulting, a company that specializes in educating coaches from all sport backgrounds and disciplines on matters relating to the developmental and elite sport performance. Derek also works with elite athletes and advises on training strategy and methodology. His current and past clients include various international federations such as Britain, Australia, and China, Altus Elite Training Center in Phoenix, Arizona, and Aspire Academy in Doha, Qatar. Derek currently lives in Kamloops, BC, with his wife, Jody, and three children. Good morning, Derek, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning, Corey. It's really good to be here.
It's great to have you on the line, and I'm looking forward to a great discussion. So generally, with each special guest, we'd like to get to know them a little more personally than just the general bio. So can you talk about your own personal athletics background and then how you eventually got involved in the coaching and administration of track and field?
Well, you and I have probably a connection in terms of our roots. We're both Burnaby boys, went to Burnaby Central. That's where I started athletics as an athlete, started off as a discus thrower, and then eventually, you know, became a decathlete. I got tired of going to meets and doing 8-10 events. I figured I might as well do it organized, so became a decathlete. Not a terribly great one, but I was decent at the national level, trained at a national training center in Toronto with some great decathletes, Mike Smith, Dave Steen, another alumnus from our high school, and the Ken Taylor legacy. And I was actually going to be a teacher. It was my plan throughout my career. And then one day got a phone call and asked to apply for a job here in Kamloops, British Columbia, which was very unique opportunity at the time because there were not a lot of, I think at the time, I eventually got the job as you said, the head coach of the Kamloops Track and Field Club. And at the time, I was the only full-time private coach in the country. And I did that for 11 years. I've always had a passion for teaching and coaching. So even when I was an athlete, I knew that I wanted to go down that route. The Kamloops job led me into coaching. That led me into the Edmonton job as a sports science manager at the Canadian Athletics Coaching Center, which was essentially like a coaching think tank where we brought, you know, a lot of coach development programs and education programs to coaches. The original intention was it was only supposed to be for national coaches, for Canadian coaches, but when we developed the website, it became this huge sort of international phenomenon, I guess you would call it. We were very successful with that, and that led to the job in Britain. Well, I was director of a national Olympic training center, performance center. The titles there get thrown around like crazy, so I always stumble with it. Essentially, what it was the Brits, when they got the 2012 Olympics 6 years out, they got a massive sponsorship, and then they decided to create two Olympic training centers for all of their athletes, one for the London-based athletes and another for all the athletes outside of London. I ran the latter, the one in Loughborough, which had about 40 of their top athletes training at the center, and then serviced all the other athletes outside of London, all throughout the UK. So that was my job for 4 years. I also coached there. I was on their Olympic team in 2012 as a throws coach. And, you know, at the end of the Olympics, staying in Britain really wasn't going to work for my family and our situation. So we moved back. And ever since then, that's when I started my company. And I've been coaching and doing coach development work ever since.
So I've learned as an athlete the difference between what a coach is and what an athlete is. You know, like, an athlete is not necessarily going to evolve into a great coach. Even a great athlete, even a super champion elite athlete is not necessarily a great coach. And also, I guess the opposite holds true. So what, in your opinion, makes a great coach?
It's interesting the way you frame that question. Yes, there's a big difference between athletes and coaches, you know, and it's not just their physical appearance. It all depends on the kind of coach you're talking about. Coaches come in many, many, many different forms, and it depends upon who you're coaching, you know, whether you're a team or individual coach. You know, there are the classic traits that we expect all coaches to have. They have to be a leader. They have to be, you know, empathetic. They have to be able to manage people, manage athletes. And I suppose the more of a team coach you are, the more those traits are dominant. When you're talking about Olympic coaches and coaches of individual events, so like athletics coaches, track and field coaches, then you're talking, it's a slightly different skill set. You need to have a good system of training, that's for sure. You need to be able to teach a technique. Typically, Olympic sports, athletes have to be peaked in a very short time period. That's an art form in and of itself. You really need to be able to manage people on an individual level. And the higher up you go, the more important that is. Elite athletes, it doesn't really matter whether they're endurance or speed power. I was going to say in particular speed power. They come with very unique personalities, tend to be very high strung. What makes them great athletes also makes them very difficult to deal with in a lot of cases. It's, you know, it's a bit of a generalization. You need to be able to cover all of those bases. And then within that, coaches develop themselves in terms of their strengths as well. I mean, I have lots of colleagues that are very, very successful in terms of Olympic medals and world championship medals and things like that, that coach from completely different perspectives. And some coaches are highly, highly, highly technical, very, very science-driven. Others are not so, but, you know, still manage to have very effective programs and they're good recruiters and things like that, and they know how to manage talent. So, you know, it really sort of depends on what your situation is, the type of athletes that you're dealing with. But I guess if I was to pick a, you know, one or two overriding trends that I see in coaching, and what I've been doing for the last 10, 12 years is studying coaching, I would say that number one, they have to have a good work ethic. I mean, every top coach I know is a workaholic. These are not guys that show up to the track, coach a bit, and then go off to the golf course. These guys live it 24/7, and everyone is like that at the highest levels. Maybe it's not so good for work-life balance, but it's kind of the way it is. You know, and after that, I would say, you know, they understand how to produce athletes in terms of having a good methodology and a good system of training. The actual systems themselves, I mean, there's a lot of them, a lot of variants to that, but the more successful coaches tend to have very good systems under them that work for them in their environment. So those are the two things I think that really kind of stand out. And they're able to keep athletes healthy, which is incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to the roots that we both have and share in Ken Taylor, our high school coach, looking back in your mind, thinking about him, I know he tried to recruit me as an athlete in other sports and invited me to come out for track. And then I thought what he did was very cool. He introduced me to all the different events and said, Corey, you know, I want you to find an event that you really like. And of course, I fell in love with the Hammer. But he was eventually a Hall of Fame coach and a good coach. What do you think made him a good coach? What was your experience like him in terms of your actual experience with Ken?
He cared. I mean, he cared more than anybody I've ever met. I mean, if he cared about you, he would not let you screw up your life. He would not let you miss an opportunity. At least in my case, that's the way it was. I mean, I was on a You know, it's funny. I was just talking about this the other night. I was at a banquet with KT, and I was talking a little bit about him and the impact he had on me. But I mean, I was on a path when I was a kid, the wrong path, and KT was there. Despite my best efforts to get off that path or to stay on that path, that wrong path, you know, he pulled me off of it. No matter, you know, there's a number of instances where, you know, he would literally grab me and put me in a corner and would do his thing, as I'm sure you're very familiar with. You know, maybe things that you wouldn't get away with today, but they were effective. You know, he pissed me off, but he cared. And it was like the first time in my life that someone outside my family really, really cared about what was going to happen to me. It wasn't just about track. And so I think that's huge. You know, there's another quality of great coaches. So,
agreed. Now, regarding the athlete, what do you look for in the athlete? What makes an athlete, in your eyes, a potential champion? What are the traits in the athlete that help you do your job better when they're working with you?
Well, I'm going to assume that we're going to agree that talent is a given, that, you know, we're talking about whichever level you're at. I mean, all top athletes have talent. So, you know, you need that to get in the door. So we'll say that that's a given, but not everybody with talent succeeds, as we know. In fact, most don't. So, I mean, I can only go by what I've seen with the athletes I've worked with in all the various different events. The ones that have risen to the top, there's definitely some trends there, some traits that are common. I'd say they're ones you've heard before. Number one is discipline. They have to succeed, especially in an individual event or an Olympic sport where you're a non-team sport. You have to have discipline. You have to have a self-drive and motivation and a passion that brings you back every single day. That's number one. It's like money won't do it. Like, you could offer someone $1 million to come out every day for 10 years and bust their ass, and they won't pull it off. It's got to be something better than that. And, you know, that's usually a passion for the sport. It's a love of the event. They've got to want to come out and get the job done. And then, of course, that extends to, you know, their life off the track. And related to that, this is going to sound like the same thing, but to me, it's slightly different. It's the ability to show up every single day. And in our sport, you know, it's twice a day in the throws. I mean, we throw 10 times a week in my program. It's the ability to show up every day and get the job done. Like, just put your head down and get the repetitions in without creating a whole bunch of drama, without making everyone's life difficult around you. And that's a very unique skill that not a lot of people have, because you kind of need to look at it in the context of the type of work they're doing. They're doing thousands and thousands of repetitions week in and week out, and largely all alone. You know, they may train in a group, but it is a solitary endeavor to some degree, especially in athletics. To be able to do that is not easy. It's not easy. And you're not getting paid for it, for the most part. Now, some athletes will make it to a level where they can make a living, but there's very, very few of those. You know, they got to find, you know, what turns them on in terms of the event. They have to find their own reward for doing that, I guess. And then the third thing, which I think a lot of people overlook, is the ability to make smart decisions, which is, you know, you don't hear a lot about, but I can tell you in my experience, that's a big factor. I've seen a lot of athletes that, you know, are disciplined. They show up every day. And then when, you know, there's key points in the season where they have to make a decision based, you know, on their training, or could be around travel or something like that, and they have to be able to make decisions that are good for their career, good for their training, good for their health, good for their recovery, you'd be surprised at how many athletes sort of fail on that measure.
Right on. Let's get into this track now, and let's talk about the throws. There are four events, essentially, for those listening that are not quite familiar, but because we have lots of students and lots of areas of professional health professionals, personal trainers, health food store retailers, athletes, coaches, that kind of thing, coaching different sports. But we got the hammer, the shot put, javelin, and discus. Now, I'm attracted to the hammer, and for me, the shot, the javelin, the discus, they're entirely different. They require all kinds of different things in my mind in terms of the connection that I have with the event. But as a throws coach, you're qualified to teach all these athletes. What's common about these throwing events in your mind?
Well, other than you're throwing something, it's almost easier to discuss what's different about them, because to the layman, as you say, you know, they're similar, they're throwing events. To the person that works in these events, they're all completely different. The weights and ranges of the implements, the aerodynamics is completely different. So, you know, the events themselves kind of reflect that. One thing is they all rely on a good base of, I hate to use that term, but strength in a general sense and strength in a specific sense are both very, very important to the throws, probably more so than the other events. Although that's a huge debate within the community these days, you know, how much maximal strength does a thrower need? We tend to accept the notion that they need a lot. A lot of people are questioning that. A lot of successful throwers are challenging that notion these days. That's a big one. One thing that probably a layman may not consider is they all require speed. Speed is number one, more than strength. And a lot of people, you know, the classic idea people have about throws is, you know, the biggest kid on the team, you know, that's a kid that you put into throws. But no, you need speed. You want to put the fastest, most athletic kid. And that's another one. I mean, the top throws athletes that I know are by far the best athletes in athletics. These guys are, even the great big shot putters that you see out there, they're cats. They're not, you know, they're not slow, clumsy people. These guys have an athletic ability that rival any athlete in the world. So I would say that, you know, those three things in order, I would say speed number one, athletic ability number two, and strength number three.
Right on. Now let's talk about the hammer. You know, I'll ask a group of people or even at a lecture, I'll say, okay, everyone knows the discus, everyone knows the shot and the javelin, but what's the hammer? And like people are looking at me like, what are you talking about? Even though it's been an Olympic event since 1900. So why is that? Why do so few people know about the hammer? It's such a wonderful, incredible event.
It is, isn't it? I mean, it's really an amazing event. And people, when you get them close to it and they watch it, they're always blown away by it. It's always the most interesting to watch. I mean, to me, the two most interesting events to watch are the javelin and the hammer. And hammer would be, you know, number one for me. It's a really good question, you know, because I guess probably the obvious answer that a lot of people would go to is that, well, it's a European event. The Europeans have been very successful at it and, you know, dominated. But it's not really true, because back in the 50s, we being North Americans, we had a guy that was so hugely successful, arguably one of the most successful hammer throwers ever. He was American. But then there was this gap between the 50s and early 60s, and that we've never quite caught up. You know, I wouldn't even say it's a gap, because it's more like, you know, the Europeans took off from us. And so it's pretty simple. It's a hard event to do. It's a hard event to do because it requires an incredible amount of athletic ability and skill. And it's dangerous, so you can't do it everywhere, so there's less people doing it. In the old days, you didn't even need a cage to throw the discus. You don't need a cage for the javelin, and you don't need a cage for the shot. But in the hammer, not only do you need a cage, now with the way health and safety is everywhere and liability, you know, you need a $50,000 cage. Not every facility has the ability to put up something like that. And then, you know, so you find less and less coaches around that are willing to coach the event. So I think that's a big factor. And, you know, I really tip my hat to you and what you're trying to do in Vernon, or what you're doing, because I think this event's going to be great and it's going to show a lot of people, you know, yeah, come on, check this out. This is a pretty cool event. It is very unique.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love the speed. I love the difficulty, the challenge. I love watching the elite do it. They make it look easy. I've let people try it who think, oh, well, that doesn't look so hard. And they get in the circle and they're on their ass within seconds. It's funny. Yeah. And thinking back to Central, when I threw with KT in 74 and 75, I didn't have a cage. And I'm just thinking, I used to watch the runners run around the track and I'd be throwing the hammer. I mean, looking back then, that was kind of crazy. I just spoke to the athletic coach there now and they've got apparently a really nice cage. So yeah, I can see that being a factor. But what would you say to somebody who wants to try the hammer? What kind of background do they need? Do they need one? Is it just the enthusiasm and passion? Or what's the hardest part about it, in your opinion?
Finding a coach. It's one event that you, it's very difficult to just pick up. I mean, if you wanted to go and pick up a hammer and just throw it, you could, right? But if you want to do it in a way that, you know, learn how to do it, you pretty much have to have somebody show you how to do it. It's kind of that technical, or at least lead you through the steps to progress to a point where you can throw it and feel good about it, right? Otherwise, as you say, if without that, you end up on your ass. Right. And that's why we need to do more events like what you're doing in Vernon, where we're, you know, helping coaches and trying to develop coaches. You know, find a place that has hammers, start off with a light one, look at some videos. It's possible to teach yourself, but it's always better, faster, and easier if you have somebody who knows what they're doing that can show you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, getting back to what you said about your throwers are throwing 10 times a week. Can you talk a little bit about your throwing strategy and what the athletes are doing that you're coaching in terms of, say, backup with the weight training or stretching, and just sort of a summary in a nutshell idea?
I had the unique and special opportunity to have the godfather of the hammer move from first Russia, then the Middle East, and then moved into my basement in Kamloops, Anatoly Bondarchuk, and I spent a year with him. I hired him as a coach here in Kamloops when I was in the club, you know, and then turned Dylan Armstrong over to him. Him and I started writing a book together, and, you know, he showed me his training system. Since then, I've used that system to develop throwers. It's a very unique system. In fact, it's completely different than anything I've ever seen. And because his English isn't good and the challenges around his communication, I've kind of become the de facto person in North America that's sort of trying to, you know, along with Martin Bingisser, to try to sort of teach people the system. It's less strength-based. It's more based on specific activities. So we do a lot of throwing, but not a lot of throwing with a lot of throws. It's more like a lot of smaller doses of throwing more often, less maximal strength and more strength and strength speed approach to it. In terms of weight room work, special exercises are incredibly important. They're next to throwing. They're the most important thing. And then the last thing, which really makes it stand out, is the system isn't designed along classic periodization lines where you say, okay, we're going to start training at point A and 3 months down the road, we're going to stop training at point B, and we're going to manipulate the training in between those two points so that you peak. It doesn't work that way. It works more like we are going to start at point A. I'm going to give you these workouts, and we are going to monitor your progress and see where you peak individually. And wherever that ends up, I'm being very general here, but that's going to be the model. That's the period that we're going to use. And then we set up the future periodization around that period or that length of time. It's called the period of development of sport form.
Now, when you come to the Vernon Hammer Classic April 30th, you're going to manage and run a clinic, which I'm very excited about and very happy to have you there. Give us an idea of what someone listening right now who might want to come as a novice or try this, what will they experience from you by taking this clinic?
Well, number one will be technical instruction. So I'm going to point out the two or three key things generally that I think all hammer throwers need to do. It's really not that complicated. It's just very hard. It takes a lot of repetition. It's very hard to develop the proper sense of the hammer. You have to understand the hammer is completely different from all other events in athletics except the pole vault. The pole vault and the hammer are unique in how force is applied, much different than the other events. In all the other events, the purpose technically is to apply force to something. So if you're a sprinter, your goal is to apply force to the ground so you move forward faster. If you're a thrower, your purpose is to apply force into the implement. You have to do that in the pole vault and the hammer, but you have this additional component where the implement itself is putting force back into you. So in the hammer, the force comes from the pull of the ball, and you have to negotiate that force. In the pole vault, it's the uncoiling of the pole is putting force back into the athlete. And, you know, those are very unique environments for an athlete to sort of navigate through in terms of how they execute the event. So I've come to sort of boil it down to a few key points that people need to understand. There's a few that are just not really looked at too much amongst a lot of hammer throwers, so I'm kind of going to stick to that. But at the same time, I'm going to point out different ways that I can help people get better. Simple as that. Other than that, I mean, it's going to be very open. I'll answer any question anybody has about training, what's important, just generally how to get better as a hammer thrower.
Right on. Looking forward to it. So the connection with Bondarchuk, okay, I know, like just studying my history of the hammer, that he was a gold medalist in the Olympics. So that makes him automatically, you know, a great hammer thrower. And then he ends up being the coach of Yuri Sadiq, who has the world record, as you well know, 86.74. Now, Yuri is a three-turn thrower. People have asked me, Corey, why don't you throw four turns? And I've always kind of been persistent in this fact that Yuri, the best thrower in the world, is a three-turn thrower. And yet at the most recent Olympics, the best throw that we saw there, I think was around 78 meters. They couldn't even crack the 80. And Yuri's record is an 86. So what is your take on the number of turns for the athlete? Because I did read somewhere that Yuri tried four, but he couldn't throw it farther. Is it necessary to turn four times? And I've even read that one guy turns five times. What is your take on the number of turns?
It's completely individual. It depends on the athlete. It depends on how they express their speed and power. Some people do it better in three, and some people need five. Very few people need five. I mean, I only see one or two guys do that, but it's really between three and four. The bigger question to me is whether or not to do the toe turn, because the toe turn adds a complexity to the technique that if you don't need to do it, don't do it, because it just complicates things. And the bane of existence for all four-turn hammer throwers is a transition between turn one and turn two. They're two different movements, so to speak. I stay away from it. The only time I teach a toe turn is when I have to, is when I have someone that needs a four-turn rhythm and can't stay in the front of the circle. So they need that extra space, and I'll teach the toe turn. I think too many coaches go right to the toe turn right off the bat simply because they think it's necessary. It's not at all. It's much simpler just to stick with a heel turn. You have a number of different variances. You have three turns, and you have four turns with a heel turn and four turns with a toe turn in the first turn. And I just think that it's much easier to get back against the ball when you lead in with it with a heel turn. When you lead in with a toe turn, it sort of sets up a dynamic that's a little bit different. It can be done. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just that I just find it simpler. I've had talks with Dr. B about this too, and he agrees. You know, he said, if you don't need to do the toe turn, don't do it. You only do the toe turn if you're getting crowded at the front of the circle, i.e. you don't have enough room to do four turns. So then you would go to a toe turn. So it's simple as that. But I mean, really, it's about rhythm. I mean, for years, when I coached Dylan Armstrong, he was world junior champ, silver medalist in the hammer throw when I was coaching him. And, you know, I kept him on three turns and we were so successful. And then he had a year or two that after junior that the improvement slowed down quite a bit. So like a lot of young coaches, I started looking for, you know, reasons for this, and I switched them to toe turn, four turns with a toe turn, not knowing then what I know now. And then when Dr. B came, he put him right back on three and instantly threw 3 meters further. So he had been focused on the shot at that point for 2 years, so he just gave up on the hammer. It was more for fun. But it really comes down to what works. It's as simple as that, you know. You'll know as a coach, you know, if you take a three-turner and you want to experiment with four turns, you have them do four and give them a month to do it. You know, if you don't see a natural harmony with it, if you don't see that the rhythm is natural and they feel better, usually they'll tell you within a couple workouts. But, you know, you give it a few weeks or a month, and if it doesn't work, you go back to three. So even with some of my four-turn toe turners that come to me already, you know, being so used to a toe turn that I just didn't bother changing it, sometimes in the fall, I'll have them do four turns on a heel. And the reason I would do that is so that they get used to being back against the ball on that entry, which is really important, because the problem with the toe turn is it really encourages the athlete to get out over that toe and not get back against the ball. So that's something that you have to negotiate and you have to deal with. It's kind of technical for hammer people, but I think you understand what I'm talking about. So,
well, it's just like Spock. It's fascinating, man. I just can't hear an end to it. And I just mesmerized myself into watching Hammer videos constantly. I've never had as much passion and love and joy in the sport as a Masters athlete. And of course, you know that this is a sport that you can continue on well into the latter portion of your life. Now, let's just end off, because our time is gone, with a plug for your company, Evil Track Sports Consulting. People can get to you through your email and get your advice or connect with you on what are they going to approach you on? What do people do when they come to you looking for your expertise, Derek?
Well, my name is unique enough. They just do a Google search and they can either get a hold of me on Facebook, LinkedIn, or just send me an email at eviltrack@me.com, or, you know, go through someone who knows me. I mean, I really need a website for my company, but just haven't got around to doing it. But I'm not hard to get a hold of. I mean, I've done enough stuff out there that there's a lot of contacts out there for me. Yeah, so they can send me an email, contact me on Facebook. I check all those things daily. Even Twitter, I'm at @eviltrack. That's my Twitter address, so I'm easy to get a hold of. You know, this is what I do, is I go around and I help people sort their issues out in terms of training and set up programs. And I do both elite and developmental as well. I do a lot of work in the I've actually set up long-term athlete development models for Britain, Canada, and to some degree, I helped with Qatar's a little bit.
Fantastic. So everyone listening, remember that each of our special guests has a dedicated webpage, and you'll find Derek's email and get to him if you're looking for expertise in this area. Derek, thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it. I appreciate what you're doing for the sport. And I just want to finish off here with maybe a final parting comment. What about athletes that go beyond high school and university, and we get out there into real life, and somehow we forget about that joy, that love, that wonderful sensation of sport, which I then rediscovered when I became a Masters athlete. But how do you find that passion as a mature person involved in life in the sport that you love? Where does that come from? How do we reconnect as adults with our sport?
Get out and do it, and don't complicate it. You know, just get out, find some guys that, I mean, if you're talking about the Hammer, you know, find some guys like yourself that are really passionate about it. Find a clinic, go to it, find a group or a coach, and, you know, ask if you can be a part of it. And there's always someone out there looking for enthusiastic people to be part of their groups. You know, if you want to do it, just go out and do it. The only thing that makes a Hammer a little bit different is, you know, you need a cage. Otherwise, you're going to get shut down pretty quick. But there's enough of those around that I think you can find what you need. You know, get to a clinic. Come to the Vernon Clinic. You will be amazed. We'll take anybody at that thing, right? I mean, beginners, everything. So,
excellent. Derek Evely is a highly successful coach and athletics educator. He's an expert in the sports sciences and has a lot of expertise in the area of speed and power development. Derek, we thank you very much for what you're doing and what you're going to continue to do in the future.
Thanks, Corey. I really enjoyed it. Always love talking about the Hammer.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik, with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see ya changing heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.